Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is the mother and daughter team, Terry and Gloria Allen. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Oh, that was in perfect unison. That's marvelous. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's been like a year in the making. So, yeah, we're happy to be here.
Something like that. I just realized I forgot to give you your honorary ranks. And, of course, since you're both new on the show, you're both lieutenants. We start you off as officers. So, yeah, we're going to go from there. I'm sorry about that. I got thrown off by having to change the intro a little bit.
This is
exciting. I said this is my first mother and daughter team on any podcast I've ever done.
Yay, cool.
I did have a father and son team over on my Pod Dylan show with fellow MASH fanatic Mike Jameson with his son Xander. That was a great show. But this is our first, again, this is, like I said, this is the first time we have a mother and daughter team. So this will be interesting conversation because you're both MASH fans. I'm going to guess that your MASH origin stories are kind of connected. I'm just going to go out on a limb here and suggest that.
You'd be correct.
Yeah. Before we get to that, I want to mention we're here to talk about episode 7 from season 6, In Love and War. It originally aired on November 1st, 1977. But okay, let's start at the beginning. Terry, how did you become a fan of MASH?
Well, when I was a teenager in Southern California, my parents started watching it. So I started watching it with them and became instantly hooked. I loved all the characters, but, you know, I have to say, especially Hawkeye, because he was kind of a hero to a lot of people, I think. But yeah, I mean, I just watched it from then on, and I was so mad at myself for the finale one. I missed like the first 10 minutes of it, so I had to wait the whole summer to see it again in rerun.
Well, you can't just skip that. How did that happen? How did you manage to miss the first 10 minutes?
I was gone. I was at a friend's house, and I was like running home. Because my parents wouldn't come and get me. But so anyway, yeah, I was just running home and it's like, oh man, I got to get it on. I got to see this.
what was with that friend?
I know. But you know, it's been something that I've loved my entire life. And there are times in my life when I've been like depressed or, you know, because of something that has happened or something. And certain episodes just cheer me up, you know, so I was just pull out a DVD, throw it in, and then be be happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure. So. Yeah. So did you watch the show from its inception all the way to the end, all 11 seasons throughout? I mean, you did never miss one, but I mean, did you basically watch it through its entire run?
I'm not sure exactly what season I started watching it because I was 10 years old when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if my parents watched it from the very beginning, but eventually I did see and have watched it and rewatched it many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I mean, I watched it all the way through.
It's funny you mentioned that, you know, you missed the first 10 minutes and then you had to wait all summer. Of course, to people nowadays, that's like, what are you talking about? But I remember that.
People aren't going to understand that.
They reran the last episode in like the summer and it was a big event. Like it was a huge, it was like, hey, we're rerunning this. So yeah, you missed it back then. It's gone. Like it's just gone forever. So that's, I'm just picturing this little kid running as fast as she can. Were you on a bike or something? Were you like navigating traffic? How far away were you?
Everywhere.
Okay. Get out of the way. I have to see MASH. The streets are barren. There's nobody. The cops are letting you go through red lights.
Well, yeah,
it's like, it's fine. It's understand. I got to get to MASH.
Just about the whole country was watching it that night.
Absolutely. Would have been. So, okay. Well, that's all right. Like I said, that's great. So Terry, that's your origin story. So I said, Gloria, obviously yours is going to be pretty connected to your mom. So, but what's your origin story with MASH?
Well, being that I wasn't born until two years after the show ended.
Oh, I'm so old.
Yeah, I know. Couldn't have been born 2 years earlier, but that's okay. I really didn't get into it until I was like 16. I was like a teenager. I started watching it on reruns at my house, at my grandparents' house. We would watch it. And then my mom bought the No, wasn't the VHS. It was the Martini. What is it?
Martinis and Medicine.
Yeah, Martinis and Medicine DVD case. And I just started watching it from the very beginning because I hadn't seen every single episode yet. But now I've probably seen it 5 times over. And but maybe even more than that. But it's just been a show that I've loved watching with my mom, you know, all these years.
So
it really
so what,
connects us. It really connects us, I think.
So what was it about the show that you hooked into? Because it's one thing to watch a show when it's airing because you're kind of caught up and, well, it's on. Let me watch it. And then, oh, I'll watch it again. But you had to kind of seek it out a little bit. So what was it about the show that connected with you? Because as you mentioned, you're coming at it a lot later after the show has already come and gone.
I think it was the fact that it was military. Because my grandpa served for 20 years in the Navy. So I think just the whole military aspect of them being away from their families, I kind of understood how my grandpa felt being away from his family for so long, for months and or even years at a time. So I kind of connected like that. But then Major Houlihan is probably one of my favorite characters. She's not my absolute favorite, but there's a few episodes that I love with her, and I just kind of connected with her because she's so crazy. And so am I. So
Good to know.
So we kind of have like that same, like when she gets really upset, she'll like throw stuff and, you know, hit people with stuff. And I connected with her because
I'm getting a little worried here, Gloria, but... Terry, you gotta get
the
this kid under
you
control.
To worry about
what
is
you,
my
what's
husband,
going on?
He, but I don't. He's nowhere near me when I get that upset. So
okay, fair enough. So all right. Well, you said the show brings the two of you together, and I'm sort of fascinated by that. Do you have similar opinions about who you just mentioned, Major Houlihan? But do you have similar opinions on what your favorite characters, episodes, seasons are? Are you guys kind of aligned that way, or do you see it differently? You both love the show, but you do love one era versus another. Where do you guys line up?
Well, I think I'm with you on this because I think the best season, the whole series, was season 4 because it brought in, you know, different characters, and I think it changed the show a lot. And the episodes were just awesome. I loved them all in that season. So I think that was my favorite season. My favorite episode, though, is Hawkeye, the one where he got into the car accident and he was left with the Korean family.
Interesting. The solo Hawkeye episode.
He pretty much carried that whole episode by himself, and that just blew me away.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's always been my favorite episode.
My favorite episode is Hot Lips and Empty Arms. It's just
great episode.
Yeah. And I loved listening to you talk to Loretta Swit about that episode because she was the perfect person to talk to about
it. Quite an honor, obviously.
Yes. And, but my favorite character of all time is Major Winchester. I just don't know why I don't know what it is about him. His humor is just like no other on the show. So yeah, Major Winchester is definitely my favorite, but The Smell of Music is also one of my favorite episodes.
I mean, it's not surprising that I'm learning this now because we're finally getting to him on season 6, but there's a lot more love for Winchester out there than I would have expected because
once
we got through the second half of season 5, the emails started trickling in from people saying, I really want to be on the show because I love Major Winchester. It was like, wow, these guys, okay. There's a lot more support out there than I ever sort of did. Not that I don't love the character too, but just I didn't know he was that beloved. And it was just all these people all of a sudden, all these Winchester stands started showing up. I was like, okay, wow. All right.
And I was I was actually listening to your podcast today. I'm still like catching up. I'm on season 5 and a lot of like the mid to the late episodes of the season, there's a lot of younger people like my age, like in their 30s, and they all seem to like Major Winchester. So I think it might be a millennial thing.
Maybe. I don't know. it's worth pursuing as the seasons roll on here. And I try and work in more and more younger guests onto the show, and more of them show up as to what it is about Winchester versus Frank Burns. It might be because, I don't know, we're all living, like, we all live among Frank Burnses right now. There's like a ton of them around in real life. And so maybe it's more comforting to have a Major Winchester to watch. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out over the next 5 seasons of MASHcast. So, okay. All right. So that's fantastic. That's great. I love that. This is something you two can sort of bond together. One last question about this. Do you watch it together now? Like, is it something you do together now? Or is it you watch it sort of separately and then, you know, oh, I was watching this one, blah, 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 that kind of thing?
Well, we did have Hulu. I started watching it once I figured out that MASH was on Hulu because right. I wanted to watch it from the beginning. I didn't want to have to drag out the DVDs and all this and all that. So I started watching it and my mom just kind of sat down with me and started watching it too. So it's something that you can walk away from that. When you've seen it so many times, you can walk away from it, grab some food, whatever, and come back. And you know what's happened and what's going to happen. So
I still pause it though.
Oh, do you really? You're like,
I still pause it because I want to see the whole thing. I'm just weird.
That's great. Like, I can't miss this line, even though I know it like the back of my head. I still
You know, I couldn't do that when I was a teenager.
Of course.
Because I was watching it live.
Yeah. That's, you know, in the Paleozoic era, Terry. That's how we watch television.
Right.
You had to just watch it and just deal with it. You didn't have any control over it at all. So, okay. Well, that's fantastic. I'm very happy to hear that MASH is bringing together the multiple generations. So that's super cool. So, all right, let's talk about this episode. As I said, it's called In Love and War. It's written and directed by Alan Alda. So really, Alan Alda tour de force there. So the plot is such. During triage, Hawkeye sees an unusual sight, an actual car, not a Jeep, a car, drive onto the compound. Inside, it is a woman named Kyung Soon, who talks with Colonel Potter. Potter then asks Hawkeye to take care of the woman's passenger, a young child with a broken clavicle. At first, Hawkeye is angry about being told who to treat and in what order. He assumes this woman is a local countess of some sort, and he's using her influence to butt ahead in line of wounded soldiers, which angers him. Potter, irritated at Hawkeye's insolence, tells him basically to clam up. After consulting with her again, he says that since the load is light, Hawkeye should go with Kyung Soon to look after her mother, who is sick. Hawkeye climbs into the car with her, but he is nasty and rude. Meanwhile, back at the 477, a new nurse joins the outfit. When she casually mentions that she was in Tokyo that morning dancing and partying with a dimwit lieutenant colonel named Donald, she attracts the unwanted attention of Margaret. Later, Kyung Soon's estate, Hawkeye's attitude changes when he sees it's nothing more than a bombed, burnt-out husk of a building where she is taking care of several people, older people and young children, all of whom are displaced because of the war. Hawkeye, impressed at Kyung's grit and dignity, quickly goes from skepticism to admiration and then quickly develops a bit of a crush on her. Despite a warning by Colonel Potter that war and romance don't mix, Hawkeye asks Kyung out on a date, which he manages to patch together. Hawkeye falls hard for Kyung, and he spends every waking moment not on duty with her. With every detail Nurse Gleason gives about the colonel she was romancing in Tokyo, Margaret becomes more convinced that it is her Donald. When Gleason mentions a peculiar and very specific romantic move her Donald tried on her that Gleason found repulsive, Margaret flies into a rage. While in OR, Hawkeye gets word Kyung's elderly mother has taken a turn for the worse, and he rushes to her side. But it is too late. Kyung's mother has died, leaving Hawkeye only to able to comfort her in her grief. During the funeral ceremony, Kyung reveals to Hawkeye that she plans to leave and head further south. Without her elderly mother, they can travel and try and get away from the brutality of war. With a number of young girls to look after, Kyung has to be coldly practical. She has sold her car, her phonograph, almost everything she has of value so they can travel as far away as possible. Hawkeye is hurt and angry, but Kyung says she has no choice. Later, as she prepares to leave in an ox cart, Hawkeye and Kyung say goodbye. They promise to write letter after letter, staying in touch, but deep down they know they'll never see each other again. They embrace one last time, and with tears in his eyes, Hawkeye watches Kyung leave. Hawkeye and Margaret later drown their respective sorrows with booze in the swamp, commiserating with each other over how much this place stinks. That is In Love and War. I'm dying to find out what you ladies thought of this episode. I mean, we'll go through it, you know, scene by scene like we do. But overall, like, what's your impression of this episode? Gloria, let me start with you.
It's not my favorite episode, but I do enjoy the moments with Major Houlihan getting all crazy.
You would by your initial description. Yeah.
Yep. I love it when she says something about licking his fingernails.
He does Donald licks her fingernails, which is just grotesque.
She does that. thing. And oh my God, it just cracks me up every time I watch it. And then at the end when she's not Tokyo and she does that, oh my God, it's just hilarious. So those were probably my favorite parts of the show, but I like the episode. I feel like she should have showed up at the last episode, kind of like, oh, I came back and let's get married. And
wow,
Slinger's not the only one staying in Korea. You know what I mean?
Oh, kind of thing.
I just wish that's kind of how it would have ended, because he was so in love with her.
That would have been a bold move of the show. That's
I know.
Wow. Oh, that is some hell of fan fiction you got going there, Claire.
I mean, he wasn't. I don't think he was even more in love with the Carly than mm-hmm. he was with her. So I feel like if she would have come back, it would have been just like that nail on the head for him.
Interesting. All right. I really want to ask you more about that as we'll go on. But I mean, initial impressions, Terry, what do you think of this episode?
Oh, I really like this episode. Unbeknownst to me, I didn't realize that Alan Alda had written it and directed it, but that just makes me like it more. When he falls in love, it's just that's the only thing in his world. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's even his work takes second place to it. You know, you could just tell even when he was coming back that he was just falling for her instantly. And I love that about Hawkeye, because when he loves with his whole heart.
He does everything. Yes. He doesn't do anything half-assed, Hawkeye.
Oh, no, he really doesn't.
Absolutely
he really doesn't.
True.
I think his surgical skills prove that.
That's okay. That's interesting. Again, I'll get into my, one thing I will say about this episode is, and this is kind of interesting because you two have kind of polar opposite ways of interrelating with the show for the first time. Because like Terry, like I did, you saw it as it aired and probably in syndication, which mm-hmm. means you saw it cut up a little bit. You know, in syndication, they cut scenes out. But yep. Gloria is watching it on DVDs. You're seeing the whole episode. So like Gloria, when you saw this one for the first time, you saw the episode as it stands, right? Okay. This is the whole episode.
The whole episode.
Right. When this aired in syndication and I first saw it, and I've gone on, I've mentioned this on like 90% of the episodes to this point, is that it was all cut up in syndication. So whoever was the editor in my local market of this episode, all of the syndicated, all the scenes cut out of this episode were from the Hawkeye Kyung romance. All of it. All the Margaret stuff was kept, which is great because the whole Margaret subplot is really funny. But so they decided, okay, whatever I'm going to edit out, I'm editing out of the main plot. So when I first saw this episode, their relationship seemed ridiculously abbreviated. Like I was like, how is he falling for her so fast? Especially after season 4, The More I See You, which we've already talked about, is one of my all-time favorite episodes. I just think it's a classic. And this, for the longest time, felt like a not as good second draft of that episode, where I was like, okay, we're trying to get Hawkeye to fall in love again, but like he falls in love in 5 minutes, and I never bought it. I just was like, nah, I know what they're trying to get at, but I'm not buying it. Now then I saw it on DVD, and a lot of that material is filled back in because that's how it originally aired. So the episode works better to me, but it's hard for me to ever get over past that first impression where I just went, no, I'm not buying this. The actress that plays Kyung is very good, and she and Alan Alda have a great chemistry, but it always just was like, what? And it's part of that is the syndicator. The syndicator just took the scissors to it and just cut out all these scenes. So it's very, very strange. Yeah. Very strange way to interact with the show. But again, we'll talk about it a little more as we go through. So the opening scene is on the compound and he's got wounded coming in, and we see this very strange image, which is, Kyung drive this woman. We don't know who she is driving this classic car. And it's sort of funny. I mean, you think about like the MASH prop department. They had to get always the same props, but for that one week, they were like, hey, can you get us like a classic 1940s car? It's like, oh, oh geez, okay, let me go get that. And it's just a fun thing to see because it doesn't fit
right
in what
right.
we've seen of the show is this seeing this classic car.
I don't know if you noticed or not, but the little boy sitting in the car, he's been on the show numerous times.
Oh, has he? Okay.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think in just about any of the kid episodes that they had where the orphanage would come or whatever, I've seen him, I don't know, 3, 4, maybe even 5 times on that show.
Okay, interesting. He's not credited on IMDb because I don't think he has any lines, so they don't give him any credit, so I didn't notice that. But it makes sense. MASH, we would, reuse the actors, same actors over and over and over again. So it's just so fun to see this car parked there, and you're like, wow, like, okay, you know. And so they get this opening scene where she's talking to Colonel Potter, and Potter tells Hawkeye what to do. And of course, Hawkeye being Hawkeye, even does the whole bit where he says, you know, Colonel, the purpose of triage is to take the neediest first, not the best dressed. He's being such a jerk to Colonel Potter.
I know.
You know, and really it's like,
on and off.
Yeah, you know, and then he's like, what makes her think she can tell me to take the boy over the clavicle? And he's like, she didn't. I told you. He's like, and it's the thing where Colonel Potter is so warm and avuncular a leader, but once in a while, whether it's Hawkeye or Margaret or Winchester, he doesn't have to do it to BJ very much. He will occasionally have to step in and go, you do remember I'm the boss, right?
Like,
and you know, and he even says, what are you getting so hot about? He's like, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, what's the problem here?
Right.
So, you know, it's a great, you know, again, he's the perfect leader. Like he's got to, we're like, okay, you know, and then he makes it, though Potter does make it a little worse when he calls Hawkeye back over, and Hawkeye again, he says, you called Monk Cronorow? And he says, you know, Madam Min's mother back through state. She's medical attention. This is all pretty light stuff. And Hawkeye does the, what pause? I could stop by six just on my way to the club for a sherry. Like he's just being such a dick.
It's so dry. It's such dry humor when it comes to that kind of stuff with him.
Yeah, and he even mentions Scott and Zelda drop by, tell them to wait by the pool. Like, he's just, oh my God. So, okay.
That's funny.
So then he's in this car, and he's driving with Kyung, and he's being really snotty. And he even, like, literally, I think, is, like, lifting his head a little at her. Like, it's almost quite literally looking down his nose at her.
Mm-hmm.
And she is not, you know, she's really not responding to him. She says, when a person you love is in pain, it's hard to wait and whatever. And so she's, you know, she's taking his abuse because she has to, because she's obviously very focused on the goal, which is to get medical attention for her mother. But then if, you know, we finally drive to this, you know, quote unquote estate, and, you know, it's not an estate. It's a hut. It's a couple of huts with like a wall around it and some looks like sand, not rocks, to make a wall. So, I mean, it's a little fancier than what you typically would see of people out in a war-torn part of the country, but it's certainly not an estate. So immediately Hawkeye's guard is lowered because he's like, oh, all right, she's not some rich person who's using her influence. And so, you know, Hawkeye immediately is like, oh, okay. And then when he meets the mother, he sees that she does require genuine medical attention. And so, of course, that's going to focus him. So in these opening scenes with Alan Alda and Q Chin, I hope I'm saying her name right, who plays Kyung. Are you buying their chemistry right at the beginning, or do you feel like it's something that grows on you as the show goes on?
I mean, I feel like it's something that's got to grow. He probably does think that she's attractive because he's Hawkeye.
Right, right.
I mean, anybody, you know, standing, basically, he will fall in love with. But, I mean, he definitely probably was attracted to her, but I don't think there was any kind of love connection just yet.
I think he had a little more respect for her after that. You know, he realized, you know, she's taking care of all of these people and a sick mother and walking a mile to get water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he had to swallow some pride right away when he saw all that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Alan Alda is good at that. Hawkeye's good at that. You know, he's able to apologize and you know, and so it fits sort of well with his character. He can handle these things. I you know, I love the set dressing of this hut that this woman is in, because it's you can't quite tell. You even wonder, like, is there even a roof on this thing? It looks like it's in the open air.
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
Me either.
You see there's a vase, you know, on a bureau, and the vase is kind of like a crack in it. So they're trying to make it look as homey as possible, but the curtains are torn. I mean, obviously it's been wrecked by artillery here and there. So they're doing their best to kind of make, and I mean, it's amazing that there's an actual bed there, like a bed with bed springs and a mattress.
I mean, it looked really nice and comfortable. Yeah.
At one point it was probably quite nice. And then it's just been rocked by artillery all these years, all these months. Right. So, I say all these years because the show's been on 6 years, but in the Korean War, it's been about, I don't know, a year and a half. So, so Hawkeye is tending to the mother. I should mention the credits here. Q Chin, has been in movies like The Joy Luck Club, Hamburger Hill. She was in a 1964 movie called A Yank in Vietnam.
Oh, geez, Louise.
Just makes me laugh because it feels like that's a movie they would have made in the 40s. And they were still trying to like sell that with Vietnam, but it was in 1964. They didn't quite know. This war is a little different. There's not going to be, John Wayne aside, there's not going to be the rah-rah kind of patriotism. Oh, just the title, A Yank in Vietnam, just sounds like, that doesn't sound fun at all. But apparently she's the co-star in that film.
Oh,
she's
my
still
goodness.
With us. She's still around and she's still acting. Yeah. The actress who plays the mother is named Noelle Toy. She passed away in 2003. She was on a lot of TV shows like Columbo and Police Woman. Her main movie credit is Big Trouble in Little China, the Kurt Russell movie, which I love. I don't know what she is in that, but she is in fact in that movie. So
might
there
be
we
worth rewatching.
That's a great movie. It's a wonderfully fun movie. So so after that, we're back at the 477th, and we're seeing once again Nurse Bigelow with kind of a lot to do. Mm-hmm. She's actually in the foreground and she introduces herself. And this is really Nurse Bigelow's big season. Like she gets more to do in season six than any other season, probably combined. And we're introduced to Nurse Gleason, played by Suzanne Krebs. She's had a lot of movie credits since then. She has been in films like Tango and Cash, 28 Days, and Million Dollar Baby. So she's done really quite well for herself since. Yeah. So she comes in as a, you know, a new nurse, and Bigelow is giving her all the details about, you know, here's where the smocks are, here's this and that. And then she mentions, just this morning, I was in Tokyo with a lieutenant colonel in one arm and a drink in the other. Bigelow says, must have been tough to leave. She says, no, wasn't so bad. I was glad to get away from that dimwit colonel. No brains. And then Margaret says, hold down the chat, Lieutenant. And then she says, don't worry. That's the last you'll hear about old Donald Dimwit. Boom. And I think I'd like to know what your lady's opinion of it is about this. I feel Margaret with the bun hairstyle is Margaret at her scariest.
Yes. Like, yes, I agree.
It's like Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS kind of thing. It's a very intimidating look. And when the look that she gives Gleason when she says Donald Dimwit, it's genuinely terrifying.
It is. Uh-huh. It is. She's a formidable person.
Yeah. And oh God, I don't even know how to explain the joy I find in her acting when she does things like this. Just her facial expressions are just, I don't know how to explain it.
I don't know that they could have found a better person to play Margaret Houlihan than her. Seriously. Well,
she's crushed it, certainly. But I mean, I actually have the episode runs as I'm talking here because I like to have it on, and I've frozen it right at the moment where she turns, and it's like, it's just her brow is furrowed and it's just really, really scary. And mm-hmm. Poor Nurse Bigelow is trying to kind of soften it, and she's like, oh, don't worry, Major, it couldn't have been your Donald. And you could see Gleason kind of going like, oh, okay.
God, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, and then she says, well, what was his last name? We didn't get to know each other on a last name basis, which is, oh, shoot, okay. He says, well, he was in an amusing sort of way. And then she tries to talk about, can we talk about this dressing that I'm doing here? And yeah. Bigelow is like, okay, I'll try and keep you away from Margaret. And then she says, watch out for the scalpel. So already she is in trouble. Now, I like to ask personal stories of my guests if they can relate to these things. Have either one of you ever, I guess both of them worked jobs. Have you ever been at a job where like on your first day, you showed up at a job and you're like, oh no, this is not right? I've had that experience.
Well, I used to be a preschool teacher. So when I started my first, 3 and 4 year olds were my jam. I started a job at a school. I had no I had no clue how the school was laid out. I didn't know where the bathrooms were. I didn't get a tour. I was just thrown into a classroom full of 3-year-olds. So at that point, I was a little frightened, but I persevered somehow that first day. And then kind of once the kids left, I kind of gave myself a tour through the whole school. But yeah, that was a pretty scary day.
What about you, Terry?
No, I think probably the first day that I started at this one restaurant as a waitress, and just know I'm a horrible waitress. I know this about myself, so I've never done it again. Yeah, and it was just, I mean, I had this one table of a whole family, and I don't know that I got one order right. Seriously, but it was just, I pretty much got fired like 2 days later.
I was a busboy for 3 days one time, and then I quit the job because it was so awful. It's not exactly the same here because obviously Gleason can't walk out, but that's even more terrifying, is knowing you're stuck here no matter what you're going to do. I will say I worked a job once. I won't get into where it was, but I worked a job once where a new person started in our department, and as they were being trained on their lunch hour, they walked out and never came back. So obviously that person spent the morning going, nope, this is not it. So I do that look on Susan Krebs' face where her eyes are darting back and forth like, oh no. And you know, she didn't know she was doing it, but she did it to herself by mentioning it. You know, had she not said anything, it would have been fine. Mm-hmm. But now she's got the ire of Margaret Houlihan, and nobody wants that.
Well, yeah, but she didn't know how bad it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So now we're back at Young's estate, and Hawkeye is watching what's going on. And at one point, you can literally see there's a wall where there's a hole where a wall should be. And he looks out through this wall and he sees her pulling vegetables out of the ground. And he, you know, he's sort of looking around and he has this sort of furrowed brow of like, you know, seeing like, oh my God, yeah, this is what these people are dealing with. And so she mentions that the father was killed a year ago. And she mentions that 8 people stay there with them. And she talks about, and he says, how do you manage? And she says, we have chickens for eggs and we grow vegetables in the garden. And then she talks about there's a well a mile away to get water. And he says, you haul water from a mile away? How can you do that? And her simple answer is, that's where the water is. And, you know, they don't underline it, but, you know, this is a theme that's been in MASH before of like, yeah, being back at the 477 is really hard, but it's not as bad as the guys on the front line. It's not as bad as other people. They've got some creature comforts. And here he is kind of, you know, always bitching about having to be at the 477. And here's this woman who has to walk a mile every day just to even get a bucket of water. Uh-huh. And the line read by Q Chin is terrific. Like she doesn't underplay it. She doesn't overplay it. She just says, that's where the water is. Very matter of fact. Like, well, what else do you want me to do?
Right.
You know,
can't turn that
across. Yeah. And you know, I think that's, I don't know if it's Hawkeye falling for her, but he's certainly admiring her.
Yeah.
And I feel like with Hawkeye, that's the beginning of any relationship he has where he's loving someone. The respect has got to be there because that's, you know, I feel like he's bedded down a lot of women. I don't get the sense that he respects a whole lot of them and he doesn't, you know, that's the way Hawkeye operates. But when he falls in love with somebody, it's because he looks at them as they have something very special, as Carly Breslin did. And here he's looking at her, and just the look that Alan Alda gives Q Chin through this, Hawkeye gives to Kyung, you could sort of see it. And it said it's wonderfully played. And as I reiterate, a lot of this stuff all cut. All this building, relationship building stuff, I never saw until the DVDs.
That's crazy. I can't believe that.
I don't understand why they would do that.
I would guess if, man, I got to tell you, if I ever had a chance to interview the local syndicator of my market for MASH, I would do it. I would totally do it. Totally.
Oh, God, I would want to hear that.
Yeah, I want to hear those stories. My hunch would be, you know, someone whose job that is to do, they're not artists, you know, probably. They're just a functionary that knows how to edit film, that they were like, you know what, MASH is a comedy. and keep the comedy. Mm-hmm. So keep all the Margaret stuff because that's funny. Yeah. And let's, you know, let's reduce the dramatic stuff, because the Hawkeye and Kyung stuff has some humor in it, but it's obviously very serious for the most part. So I'm guessing they would just say, you know, keep as much of the comedy as we can. And so Hawkeye tries to talk to her, and speak to her. And I think he says, I think it's in French. He tries to talk French to her and he blows it. He has no idea what he's saying. And so.
Yeah, he says something about poulet à la poche.
Mm-hmm. You just said you were a chicken.
Yeah,
it's funny. It's really sweet. It's a really sweet scene. So Hawkeye goes back to the 477th and he runs into BJ and Potter, and he, you know, talks about, you know, geez, okay, all right, this isn't, you know, this isn't as bad as I thought. And okay. And then so Potter has this great line. He says, we're going to drink your whiskey. You want to join us? And Hawkeye's like, as long as you're buying. And right from the get-go, we could see that Hawkeye is falling in love with her already. And yeah. I love Colonel Potter is like, no, do not fall in love. Don't fall in love during a war. BJ says, why shouldn't he? He says, because war is cruel. For every hello, there are two goodbyes. I have no idea if Alan Alda, who wrote this episode, came up with that line. I'm going to guess maybe. I don't know.
I've kind of heard that line before.
You think so? Have you heard that? Yeah. It sounds almost too perfect.
I feel like it's a military, something they say in the military, like a relationship that ends in the military. For every hello, there's two goodbyes. I think that's something they say in the military.
Okay. All right. I've never heard it before. I mean, obviously the name of the episode is In Love and War, which is named after the Hemingway story. So right there, they're sort of owning up to that. But I love that Potter knows Hawkeye to the point where he immediately knows what's happening.
Right.
And he's trying to head off his friend saying, don't do this. Don't do this. And Hawkeye, obviously, not listening.
What I love about that scene is when Colonel Potter is talking to the post. It's like,
yeah.
Why are you talking to the post? He's like, I might as well. I'm not getting anywhere with them.
Right. That's great. He knows it. He knows it's a done deal. Hawkeye's just going to go off. That's the end of that. Yeah, it's really terrific. So we cut back to Hawkeye and Kyung, and he's now involved. We see that he's helping fix the hole in the wall. He accidentally smashes his hand with a hammer, and Kyung says, you know, your hands are for surgery, you know, like don't waste your time doing that. But he's spending all of his time now trying to help Kyung and help the mother. And, you know, he's falling for her. He's totally falling for her. And, you know, when I watch this episode again for this, you know, for the purpose of this record, I'm still having a little trouble buying it just because it's so fast, but yeah. It's working on me better than I remembered it. But it's obviously the two of you, I don't know. Do you feel like at this point this is plausible?
I mean, I feel like it. I feel like it's not just like night and day. I feel like days have passed, maybe even a week or two. I mean, who knows how fast you fall in love with somebody, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's instant. Sometimes it takes a while. But, I mean, I feel like there was some time that was spent, you know, from the time he met her to the time that he had to say goodbye. That was a significant amount of time, I would say.
I don't know. Yeah. I think, you know, the way people fall in love is different for everybody. He did have a spark. You know, I think when he realized how she lived and what she had to do, you know, he had a spark of respect for her. But then, you know, as time went on, you know, you could see, you know, he was falling in love, and whether it was instant or it took days or weeks or whatever, you know, they did fall in love. So.
Yeah, we don't really get the sense of how much time is passing. I mean, obviously the mother is pretty ill, so it can't be that long, but we don't know. Is this days? Is it maybe weeks? It could be. Maybe.
Who knows how long the mother was sick before she actually got help.
She might be one of those people that is, you know, sick for months and months and months, you know, that kind of thing. And like, but yeah, so we don't exactly know. So Hawkeye turns to Winchester, making his kind of only appearance in this episode. To borrow, not borrow, he's not going to return it, some nice canned food for Kyung, and Winchester is having none of it, and except he finally offers a can of wild boar goulash, which sounds absolutely revolting. Even if I wasn't a vegetarian, it still sounds, I don't even know what that, I don't even know what that means. I mean, I know what goulash is and I know what boar is, but it sounds absolutely grotesque. And then Winchester even says the can is bloated a little bit. You might want to check
swollen,
that out.
Yeah.
A little swollen. Yeah. So, yeah.
Ooh. Better let her taste it first.
That's,
yeah.
That to me is like the quintessential Winchester at his best. But, you know, he did show humanity once in a while.
He'll do some charitable gesture, but it's kind of like one step up, two steps back sort of thing. Like, all right, you know, he'll donate a can to the effort, but it's something no human being would want to eat. So, okay, well, it doesn't really doing anybody any good. Yeah. Hawkeye tries his best, though. He actually arranges a candlelight dinner. They've got the phonograph. She has her phonograph where they're playing Beethoven. He brings a bottle of wine. He's got candles. So he's really doing the full court press here. He's doing his best he can in a war setting. And, you know, I would have to think most women, I think, would probably really be quite charmed by this, by the sheer effort that he's putting into this.
Yeah, I would be.
Yeah, I would be a little, it would be charming for sure.
I mean, he brings pork and beans.
I like, you know, pork and beans.
Okay, but, all right.
You can't get anything that the mess tent cooks.
Right, I need something in a can that was prepared somewhere else.
I you know, I mean, right. I mean, I'm get part of the thing this episode feels so different than all the other ones is because so much of it, I mean, obviously the Margaret stuff is different, but almost all the Hawkeye stuff takes place out of the 477th. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you could understand that she has to be around to keep the children safe and keep her mother well. So she can't be at the 477. She can't be at the mess tent and they have a dinner together. It all has to be kind of on her terms.
Right.
So it gives the episode a little bit more of kind of a slightly grander scope, because it just feels like, oh, we don't really generally spend this much time out of the 477. I mean, there's some aid station and things like that. There's exceptions here and there. But it does have a, dare I say, cinematic kind of quality, because we are, you know, we're just seeing settings we don't normally see. And Alan Alda as director, this scene where they are talking back and forth, and Q-Chin is beautifully lit when they start talking back and forth. That is straight up a romantic drama lighting. I mean, she looks, there's like a key light on her and it's all dark in the background. I mean, she looks gorgeous, and that's Alan Alda and his cinematographer really kind of pushing the audience as hard as it can to, like, you know, see in her what Hawkeye sees in her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was almost glowing at that point.
Yeah. He has a quote where he mentions that her arrows has pierced his heart. And she's like, where'd you get that from? And he says, the classic comic edition of the Divine Comedy, which I love that he owns up to his source. Being a comic book nerd, I felt compelled to look that up. There is no Classics Illustrated version of the Divine Comedy. They never did that. But that's okay.
Well, they do a lot of stuff that was never done in life, I think.
Or didn't exist until like 30 years after or something like that.
Right. Yes. As we've established, Radar gets Spider-Man comics and Spider-Man didn't exist for another 10 years. So fine. In this MASH universe, the Classics Illustrated did do a version of the Divine Comedy. That's fine. You know, it's all good. I'm going to guess the answer to this for both of you is no. Have either of you ever read a Classics Illustrated comic book? Are you even aware what those are?
I mean, I know what a comic book is.
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I used to have to, for a certain writing class, I used to have to make up comics, but
did you really?
that was years ago.
that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
I will, for people who don't know what Classics Illustrated was, just a brief history. It was a series. It was a comic book series where they adapted great books of literature. Oh. And they were not sold at newsstands, or maybe they were, but they were basically done through schools. They were sold, they were distributed through schools. They had no advertising. It was really meant to be as, like, these are educational. And so they adapt, and you know, obviously they're adapting Moby Dick in 30 pages. It's a little hard to do, but right. they were, and it ran for decades. It ran for decades. They did, you know, all the great works of literature, Shakespeare. They also did stuff like Tarzan of the Apes and things like that. But that's what Classics Illustrated was. And it was always some people shorthand for like, oh, this is somebody who wants to be well-read, but they're no one to read a real book. So they'll read the classics.
That's why it would be perfect for Radar to read, so that he could impress, you know, the ladies.
Exactly, exactly. I had some as a child, and I found them crushingly boring. So I was like, no, I don't. I'll just read the book. If I want a real literature, I'll just read the book. Anyway,
right there you go.
Yeah. So anyway, this scene ends with Hawkeye and Kyung dancing, and it's a really beautiful sequence. Again, courtesy of our director, where the lights are just there's just a very minimal amount of light on them, and they're kind of in the sea of darkness, and they dance, and the music is soft, and the camera sort of pulls out and fades to black, and that's our act break. And it's terrific, you know, it's really beautifully cinematic. And I keep going on about that scene, cut in syndication.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah. We had
I feel
part
like
of
they
it.
Could have left like one, like a tidbit of something just to prove that, you know, he was falling for her. Something.
Some of that scene is in the syndicated edit. I mean, I haven't seen the syndicated one in years. I'm only going by my memory. But I can remember when I watched the DVDs, which scenes jump out at me, where I was like, wait, I've never seen that before. What's that? yeah, I was like, oh my god. So we come back, and they're in, I don't want to say they're in bed together, because there's no inclination that they have actually slept together, but they are in a bed together. Mm-hmm. And he explains his name, where he says, you know, my name's Hawkeye. What does that mean? Well, it's Eye of the Hawk. What is a hawk? Well, it's sort of a cute vulture. I think that's fair to hawks. Hawks are beautiful birds. But he tries to talk about what it's like back in America on Thanksgiving. We eat a turkey, which is kind of a vulture with a double chin. She gives him a thing called chusuk. I don't know what that is exactly. It looks like a kind of like cabbage or something like that. I'm not exactly sure what it is. And then she talks about this ceremony that they have, and they have customs, and they're trying to get to know each other. They're just trying to get to know each other, and they're learning about each other's customs. And Hawkeye is, you know, very open hearted to all this. And it's a great scene. And then we hear a rooster crowing, and we find that they have been staying up together all night. They've been up together all night, which is really, and again, I think it's a really beautiful sequence. You know, that these are two people that are falling up for each other on an intellectual level and just staying up all night and talking. And that's, I think that's really, really beautiful.
It is. I think it is. I think that's where he actually said, okay, I'm in love with this woman.
You think this is it? This is he's crossed the line now?
Yeah.
I think so, because once you have that long talk with someone that you've been seeing, you have that long hours on hours talk, getting to know one another. I think that's the pivotal moment where your relationship turns from just dating to a little bit more serious.
So he tries to leave, and he's kissing her, and he's like, I have to leave, so long, so long. And it's not, you know, it's not going anywhere. And then we hear the rooster crow again, and he's like, okay, I'm going. So the rooster is kind of punctuating. You got to get going, because he mentions there's going to be casualties at dawn. And, you know, it's another, they don't get into this, but it just only because I've seen these shows so many times, I think about the stuff that's not on camera, where Hawkeye has other duties other than dealing with casualties. You know, he has OD duty. He has to be on. And he's obviously getting out of a lot of this because he's with Kyung. And that means that Colonel Potter and certainly BJ, maybe even Winchester, are covering for him because they know where he is, which I always think is like, that's your buds doing you a solid, you know?
Right. Yes.
That could be a whole nother episode of itself.
There are some, believe me. Oh, Gloria, there are so many MASH episodes I have written in my head that will never.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Oh, you've done that too, Terry?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Oh, what? Like what? Oh, I gotta hear that. I
Oh,
don't mean to
God.
put you on the spot, but I mean, have you like been like, oh, that would have been a fun thing to do?
You know what I would have liked to have seen is Radar at home.
Interesting. You mean like follow him home after he got discharged?
Seeing, all the stuff that he goes through and meeting his whole family and just I just think that would be something something that I would have wanted to have seen, but maybe not everybody, obviously, but yeah.
Have you ever seen the, you probably haven't because almost none of America did. Have you ever seen on YouTube the Walter pilot for Radar
No.
that never sold as a series?
No.
Oh, well, it's a thing you can go find on YouTube if you're
We're gonna
so
have to look that
inclined.
up after this.
It's called Walter. It was, have you even heard of this before I go even
No.
further? Okay.
No.
Well, much like Classics Illustrated, I'm going to bore you with this detail in a moment. In during Aftermash, during when that show was on, Radar, Gary Berghoff as Radar is on Aftermash. He has a two-parter
Right.
as comes back as Radar, of
Right.
course. And that led to Gary Berghoff starring in a pilot, intended to be a Radar solo series.
Sounds like
And it didn't, CBS didn't like it, and they didn't buy it as a series. They aired the pilot one night as just to kind of burn it off because they paid for it. Why not run it? And then apparently it ran the same night as I believe the Democratic National Convention
Oh boy.
in 1984. And the news, the CBS news organizations in several sections of the country preempted it to run the DNC
Of
convention.
course.
So quite literally half the country never even had a chance to see it. So
Oh.
it aired on like the East Coast, because I remember I watched it because it was MASH. So I'm watching it. It aired and disappeared. And for many years I thought it was like a fever dream that I had. That didn't really happen. And then no, it does. But it's not good. I'll tell you that it's not good.
It's
But if you like Radar and you want to see Radar in another context, you can go check it. The whole thing is on YouTube. So you have that
Oh,
to look forward
wow.
to,
Oh,
maybe.
very cool. Thank you for that.
There you go. okay, we're back at the 477th, and Nurse Gleason is getting a shower, and
Oh,
Margaret is
boy.
being incredibly unprofessional by asking more questions. And I don't think it was him, Major. And Margaret's like, oh, it couldn't have been him. He wasn't even in Tokyo last week. Oh, okay, great, 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 great. And then he says, yeah, he was a lunatic. He kept licking my fingernails. And here it is. She does the thing you mentioned, Gloria, where she's doing classic comedy stuttering kind of thing. And I love that Nurse Gleason, because she's not looking at Margaret, doesn't realize that she's digging a further hole for herself, or she's like, isn't that creepy? Like, she's going on and on, and she doesn't realize that about what's about to happen. And then, of course, Margaret completely explodes, tears all the robes off of the hooks, starts trashing the throwing him the walls, starts hitting Gleason with the robes,
I
which
felt
again,
so sorry for
incredibly unprofessional. Completely
Unfortunately.
unprofessional. Kind of like Margaret did in the earlier The Last Laugh episode, where she gets mad and kicks Radar. That's completely unprofessional. But if you notice, she starts grabbing the shower stall, right? And she's shaking it like she's the Hulk. She's just shaking it off of its hinges. If you watch Susan Krebs, she's starting to laugh. She
Yeah,
starts.
I saw that.
They
She's trying
cut,
not
but
to.
she's trying not to, but they cut just before. But how can you not laugh when Loretta Swit is just exploding on you like that? It's funny.
Oh my God.
I
I
don't.
didn't even, I never noticed that. I'll have to watch that again.
I don't think I've seen so many clothes hanging up on the wall, though.
Yeah, who are all those robes for? Who are all those people?
I know. And all the toiletries on that table. I don't know that I've ever seen that in any other episode.
There's a lot there. They gave a lot of props for Margaret to throw around, so
To
it all
throw
kind of
around.
worked
I just
out.
felt so sorry for that nurse. And she's just like, oh my God,
Now, Gloria, you said you really relate to Margaret in this. So what is this something you do? Do you have this explosion of rage? Like, what's going on?
Well, it's just, you know, I have teenagers, Robert, so it's kind of hard to get them to listen sometimes, and I'll ask them nicely maybe 8, 9, 10 times to do something until I blow up and start just all out just screaming at them because they don't listen. And I mean, it's not how Margaret gets angry, not because people aren't listening to her, it's because somebody just made her mad for some other reason. But I just feel like I relate to her that she gets so angry and protective over this guy who's basically cheating on her and for no reason, but I have a reason.
Okay. I'm guessing that Terry doesn't have that reaction because she gets to be grandmom, and grandmoms always are way nicer because they can be.
I have my moments with my granddaughters.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah. Right. And by the way, they're actually, well, my older one, she likes to watch when we're watching it, she'll like to watch it too. Wow. She loves Hawkeye. She's 16 years old. She's a big Hawkeye fan for sure.
Oh, that's so sweet. I love it. Three generations of MASH fans. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. That's fantastic. All right. Well, we'll pencil her in for season 10.
Okay. So, sounds good.
Cool. Now we're in surgery, and Hawkeye gets news that Kyung's mother has taken a turn for the worse, and he's in the middle of surgery and he can't get away. And then there's this bit about where Margaret is again being terribly unprofessional by bothering Nurse Gleason about, was it his muscles? And she's, you know, and then there's this bit about, we got to find out what's holding up the shipment of hemostats. And Potter asks Margaret to go check on it. And she says, I'll have someone do it immediately. And Potter's like, I'd rather you did it. And Margaret's like, I'm rather busy right now. And then he says very firm, I'd really rather you did it, Major. Like, okay, got it.
And then I love how everybody's like, thank you, Colonel Potter. Thank you.
Yeah, they do three in a row. Yeah, actually four of them. Hawkeye, Winchester, BJ, and Mulcahy. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Colonel.
Right at the end, so he doesn't get yelled at.
This was kind of an afterthought, I think. Like, thank you, Colonel.
it's Potter. Just so good with that. I'd really rather you do it, Major. Oh, okay. All right. I understand.
Yeah, she can't disobey an order.
Yeah. So Hawkeye shows up and we find out that the mother has died. And Kyung has this line about, she kept asking for you, you know, in that demanding tone she has. And that's one of those moments where, when I was watching the episode, that I always have trouble with, because I'm like, well, I don't, like, we haven't seen that. Mm-hmm. We're just being told that she has some trait that Hawkeye has been around her enough to know about, but we're just being told that we have to just kind of like, oh, okay, that's it. And that's one of those small little hiccups where I'm like, this story doesn't totally work for him, because there's just so much left out because they're trying to get this done in 24 minutes. I don't know. Am I being too harsh on this show?
I think that you kind of saw it when they were trying to build the so-called wall, and when they went over to the bed and she started kind of yelling and trying to shake the hammer back and forth. So you kind of see that, you know, she could be that.
Was that part cut in syndication where after they kind of put that wall up, you went over to the mother?
Yes,
was
they
that cut
that. Yeah, they cut that too.
Yeah, they cut it, so you never saw it.
Yeah. So I mean, that was just I think that was just like a snippet of, you know, they had to show something of her being demanding.
They didn't show it.
But right, yeah. I mean, so, like I said, I when I saw the DVDs, then I saw it, like, oh, okay,
right, correct.
But yeah. So then we're back at the 477th, and Margaret is talking to Colonel Potter, and we find out that he has transferred Nurse Gleason. Which only in MASH, where we have to get rid of a character, do transfers go through same day. You
know? Right. I don't know how that works.
Like, what did he put her on a Jeep that he packed her bag for her? And he's like, here, there you go. Get out. But again, Potter's being nice. You know, he's trying to help Margaret out. And he has this wonderful little story for her where he talks about a horse and his car and his wife. And he's like, what do you think I did? And, you know, in terms of about getting rid of the horse or getting rid of the wife and getting rid of the car because the car color spooked the horse. And Margaret says, well, you could have painted the car. And Potter's like, I never thought of that. Which is great. Oh, yeah, I could have solved all that. Like, so he has this wonderful homespun story and it really just collapses in on itself. But then he ruins it by mentioning that he had Gleason transferred to Tokyo, which is, of course, where Donald is in the first place. And Loretta Swit does the same.
Yes. Yes, I love that.
Yeah, that's, that was my favorite time that she did that.
Yeah, I loved it.
Tokyo.
Yeah, she's great at the stuttering anger. So now we are back at the quote unquote estate on Hawkeye. They're having a funeral for the mother, and Hawkeye is in his dress uniform, which is, I think, a wonderful detail. You know, that the level of respect he is showing, that he bothers to dress in his uniform, which we know he hates. And they have this conversation where Kyung says, you know, we can't stay in this house anymore. And she says, how can I stay here? How can I do that to the children? And she says, you know, I can't even let them play in the fields because of the landmines. And then she says, in a couple of years, the boys will learn to be thieves and the girls. And she puts this pause and then she says, what do you think will happen to the girls? Which is, you know, a magnificent line and great delivery, because we don't need any more to be told, you know, what that means. You know, like, yeah, right. Okay, these, they, you know, these children are under serious threat and I can't, you know, we can't have that. And so it's great. It's this scene was in the original, in the syndicated version. And I thought this worked really well. She talked about that she sold the phonograph and traded the car for oxen. And, you know, Hawkeye's like, you're being awfully practical here. And she's like, well, I thought that's what you liked about it. Liked about me. And, you know, he's being a little selfish because he kind of wants her to stay here and kind of be, be available to him. And it's like, well, he gets to go back to the relative comfort of the 477, then she doesn't have to deal with that. And so, you know, you could see that this thing was never going to work.
No, I don't think so.
Like I said, if she had just come back in that very last episode of MASH, that would have just topped the cake for me for sure.
That's a point. We're going to talk about that later on in a little bit about that kind of detail about this episode. So then we have the funeral. And we see there's a bunch of there's a bunch of Koreans in dressed in all white, and they're carrying the coffin, and there's like a trail of mourners behind them. And there's flowers, and again, Hawkeye's in his uniform. And I always want to give MASH credit when it does something like this, because it's something that I'm sure network wise they were getting notes about, and they probably had to fight this off. They let this funeral play out. Not really long, but you see more of it than I think most other shows would bother to show you. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of the wedding scene in Ping Pong from season 5, and even the Briss in the Life with Father episode, where we are watching another culture that maybe most viewers aren't familiar with. And we're seeing something important to their culture, and the show is letting it play out. It is showing respect for the culture to give you at least a decent glimpse of this event and giving it the respect that it deserves. And I can imagine that if, I don't know if MASH had to deal with network notes, virtually every show has had to, even the biggest, most successful ones have had some network goon in your ear telling you to cut this or do that. But I like it that MASH has done that repeatedly, that we see enough of the funeral, I think, to get the kind of the understanding of the solemnity of it. And it's not just background elements.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. That reminds me of the, I think it was like a season 3 episode. Cause I think Henry was in it, where the guy, the older gentleman didn't want to have surgery until the place was blessed. The exorcism. That's right. She came in and danced, and they had the
That's another great example. I didn't even think about that one, but yeah, we see that whole dance. Yeah, I think
MASH covered so many topics that shows in the 70s would have never even touched.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, time is valuable on television, and for them to even spend 30 seconds showing a Korean funeral, I mean, where else are you going to see that, you know, on television? You know, like, why, what other show is going to show you that? Certainly not, you know, it's like I could turn on Laverne and Shirley and see that or whatever. So not to knock Laverne and Shirley, but you know what I mean.
I get it.
Yeah. So now we're back at the 477th, and BJ, who has not had a whole lot to do in this episode, does his best. And he says, you know, well, look at it this way. There's a couple of, during this whole war, there's, you know, a couple of weeks, I think he says, that you know, you won't want to forget. And, right, you know, Hawkeye's like, well, but that, he says 2 weeks. So now we know 2 weeks. That's how long this romance took place, basically, for 2 weeks. And Hawkeye's like, does that help? And would it help you? And BJ's like, well, I guess not. And, you know, he's doing his best. He's being the best friend he possibly can. Winchester is cooking a steak. And Hawkeye's like, could you not, you know, cook that? It smells terrible. I don't know what Winchester is doing to a steak that makes it smell bad, because steaks cooking smells great. Yeah, I get it, even as a vegetarian, steaks cooking smells wonderful. So I don't know. what is Winchester adding to the steak?
Like, he had to have used some kind of like stinky oil or something just to cook it.
Like, what are you doing to a steak that makes it smell bad, Charles? Like, how bad of a cook are you? There's a great little detail, though. Again, I love this stuff, and it's only from seeing these shows so many times, is that, you know, Charles is cooking the steak. Hawkeye and BJ are sitting on Hawkeye's bunk, and Winchester gets up and pours himself a drink from the still. And I love that he gets to use the still now, you know, like he doesn't have. I like that little detail. That's like, okay, he's lived with them long enough that he has access to the still like the other guys do. I just think that's like a great little, you know, just a little detail. Like, all right, he's kind of one of the gang. He doesn't want to be, but he kind of is.
Right.
I think he was going to use it on the steak, and it was just, it fascinated me that it took him so long to pour that little bit of stuff into that cup, to give Hawkeye that time to go over there and dump his steak on outside the door.
David Ogden Stiers really makes a meal out of it. You know, he's really like slowly cooking. Cause yeah, Hawkeye grabs the steak and throws it and dumps it
right
onto the ground, which is like in a context where getting a steak is probably impossible. That's a really mean thing to do.
I don't know if you noticed, but when he came back in from dumping the meat and he set the pan back on the burner, it did not make a sound.
Oh, I know. I didn't
notice
that.
Totally quiet. It's like, that's got to make some kind of sound when you set it down. How did that not make any sound?
He's had it on low. He had it on very low.
He was trying to do that.
Yeah. And then he says, well, what did you do with my steak? It's now a Korean welcome mat. And of course, you know, Winchester were being absolutely outraged. And he says, you know, you have to tack his meat behind his back. Hawkeye gets up, and I love that immediately Charles goes, Colonel Potter. He's like a little kid.
Like, what is Colonel Potter going to do?
Yeah. I love that. You guys must have dealt with that, right? You know, like, the grandkids go to grandma for absolution when you're yelling at them, Gloria?
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. They always run to grandma. They never run to their dad, which I don't know why, but grandma always seems a little bit safer, I guess.
My grandmother used to take when the vegetables I didn't want to eat, she used to take them for me and eat them for me.
Oh,
that's so sweet.
Yeah. My mother's mother would do that. It was like, if I was being a real twit about not eating my vegetables, she would wait till my mother got up and then eat them for me. And be like,
I wish I had that when I was younger, because I sat at the table for like 3 hours not wanting to eat my peas.
It didn't happen a lot. I wasn't that troublesome, but once in a while. And so, yeah, she would cover for me. So, you know, I hear it. You're a good grandma, Terry. Hawkeye shows up and he has, I don't know. He's gotten her a phonograph. I don't know if it's Winchester's. Like, did you just steal it? He got it, you know, but he gets her a phonograph, because she talks about that she sold the phonograph. And so he gets her a replacement. And you pause it into this ox cart, and then he has this speech where he says, I want to know how much it's meant for you to come in my life. There's no words for it. And they talk about they're going to stay in touch. They're going to write. And she says, of course I will. And he says, you know, I want to know about everything, every detail. And they're, you know, building it up. Yeah, we're going to write. We're going to write every day. We're going to fill letters, whatever. And then he immediately goes to, I'll never see you again, because he knows. How's she going to write letters? You know, I mean, was there a post office? I mean, that's not going to work. So he knows right then and there that this is it. And it's hard. You know, it's hard to watch. Alan Alda doesn't cry. Hawkeye doesn't cry, but his eyes get moist, and he just knows he's never going to see this person again. And that's tough. It's one thing to think about it in the abstract or after you've left this person, but it's hard to know. This is it. So it's, you know, like I said, I give the show a little grief because I just think it's too condensed. But in the scenes where it works as best it can, I think this is a great goodbye. Like I buy these two.
Yeah, I do too. I especially love the part where she kissed his hand and then he kissed hers instead of them kissing on the lips. I thought that was perfect for this scene.
Why? How so?
I don't know, because I think that she would have felt awkward in front of everybody if he just grabbed her and kissed her on the lips.
It was more of a gesture of respect to the family and the kids, not being so romantic in front of them, you mean?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. I never really thought about that. But yeah, they do that. It is a sweet gesture that they do. And so he watches her walk off. And that's it. That's the end of the main part of the show. And that's it for Kyung. So now we're back at the button scene. We're back at the 477th. And finally, our A and our B plot converge, where Hawkeye and Margaret are drinking and they're going on and on about how much this place stinks. The war stinks. The smell stinks. And then he says, you know, she's like, what are you agreeing for? You're one of the things around here that stinks. Which he finds very funny. And he says, she says, what are you going to do? And he says, Hawkeye asks her first, what are you going to do? She says, I'm going to take him back. And then she says, what are you going to do? And he says, I'm going to forget her. And he says, well, that stinks. And it certainly does. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of our episode. So of this whole show, this is my favorite scene. Like I think this scene, I love that Margaret is part of the gang now. You could argue it's maybe a little less contrast that she's part of the gang, but as we all know, Alan Alda and Loretta Swit, marvelous rapport. And these two as drinking buddies are really funny. And so I love them sitting there together and drowning their sorrows. And so I've come around on the show. I'm not as down on it as I once was, but this still remains my favorite scene. I just think this, the way to wrap it up, to dovetail the two plots, I think is perfect.
Yeah, I was going to say how hard cut the A and B plots were during the episode, but there was a reason for that. And then that very last button scene just put that icing on the cake. So
now I'm going to ask you to imagine something that is not shown on the episode, but that's why you're here. That's why you get to be on the podcast. You get to do these things. When Margaret says, I'm going to take him back, right? They do not, and they don't have time. You have to fill in. Did she tell Donald that she knows? Or is this all on Margaret? Margaret is processing. And when she says, I'm going to take him back, it's not because they broke up over the phone. It's in her mind. He doesn't know that any of this is going on. To Donald, everything is great. He's back in Tokyo and he's doing whatever he does. This is all on Margaret, or do you think she and Donald have had a conversation about the nurse?
I feel like that would be a whole nother scene of her on the phone, because her on the phone talking to Donald is
Donald! Donald, what are you doing?
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of feel like it was just her. You know, that maybe she was thinking in her own mind that maybe she would divorce him then. But no, she's gonna stick it out and take him back. But this kind of sticks in her brain, I think, and for the rest of her marriage, that she knows that this could be the beginning of the end.
Right. Well, I mean, it's becoming clear that, like, I mean, they've only been married, what, in MASH time, a couple of months, maybe?
Right.
And he's already cheating on her. And I don't want to say that, like, somehow because, because you're 20 years in, that's more acceptable. But it says something about Donald that just a couple of months into the marriage and he's already cheating. But so you think, Terry, that this is all on Margaret's side, that, like, Donald knows nothing about that Margaret has any clue that she knows what's happened.
Yeah, that's the way I feel.
But I feel like with the whole, like, when they gave Donald Penobscot an actual, we put a face to the name, he didn't seem like that kind of guy. You know what I mean?
How so? What does that mean? I'm fascinated by that.
It didn't seem like he's the kind of guy that runs around and sleeps with women like Hawkeye or, you know, Trapper or anybody, any other character that cheats on their wives constantly. I feel like he was more dedicated to military than he was to anything else.
Okay.
So I didn't feel like his character really put that off. So
interesting. Okay. All right. That's an interesting observation. Some people, after we posted the episode, Margaret's Marriage, were not super hot on the actor that played Donald Penobscot. I really liked him. I thought he had a kind of real lantern-jawed Captain America kind of vibe to him, compared to the other actor, Mike Henry, who will play Donald Penobscot later on this season. So I mean, I'm asking you guys to jump ahead a little. Which do you guys have a preferred Donald, the one from the MASH Olympics or the one from Margaret's Marriage?
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the one, the first one. Yeah, I thought he. Especially that scene where he wanted to watch surgery and just
fainted.
So, I like the first one.
Yeah.
I thought he was much more believable and he was actually funny.
Beeson Carroll, the actor, I should say. Beeson Carroll is his name. What about you, Glory? Do you have a preferred Penobscot?
Yeah, it was him for sure. And when you say Captain America, I'm thinking with his jawline, I'm thinking more like Clark Kent. He was more like a Superman to me.
He got that, yeah. But, you know.
Yeah, but he was just that superhero type military guy that, yeah, maybe he could have been Captain America. Who knows?
Yeah, they did Captain America TV movies in the 70s. It could have been him. That's interesting. So I've always been fascinated with that idea when Margaret says, I'm going to take him back. Because I'm like, did they break up? And like she's by, or like this is all internal. This is all on Margaret, and in a way that's even more heartbreaking, because she's dealing with the pain that he's getting away with because he doesn't know how much he's hurting her because he doesn't know that she knows. So it's a terrific final scene, and I'm really glad that they paired these two up in the final moments of the episode. Now,
yeah.
Regarding your comic, Glory, that you wish that they had brought Kyung back in the final episode, which again, that'd be a hell of a swing for them to do to fit that in the 2 hours. Like, oh, by the way, we're, you know, Hawkeye's not dealing with enough.
Right. I know. I kind of like the whole, like him being in the psychiatric hospital kind of slipped my mind. And yeah. Like, I feel like, oh man, if Sydney,
oh, by the way,
maybe if Sydney was like, well, was there anybody that you met along the way that you think would be able to help you cope with what you're dealing with? And maybe he could mention her.
Oh, that would have been a pull. That would have been a real,
you know what
pull.
I mean? Yeah. It's
no,
just
totally,
like,
totally.
He was just so in love with her that I don't think that he ever would ever forget her. So
see, but that's part of the reason. And that's not this episode's fault, but that's part of the reason this show to me has not ever resonated with me the way The More I See You did, is because she's never been mentioned again. Like, it's like it never happened. Right. They never mention it. And he does mention Carly Breslin in another episode. It's an offhanded reference, and unless you're an obsessive fan, you probably didn't even know what he was referring to, but he does refer to her. And so it was like, oh, okay, Carly is still on his mind. But it's by the fact that this episode, it's like Kyung never existed.
Wow.
And that to me is always like, well, how much, how much did he really love her? The fact that it's like, she's gone forever. But that's not this episode's fault. That's just the quirk.
Okay, it was a bit of a stretch, but hey. Yeah.
I like it, though. It's again, that's a lot for Alan Alda to tackle as an actor. You got to do the whole dead chicken thing, and then you're also bringing back his old love from season six.
She would have, I'm sorry. If she would have come back in the last episode, him and Margaret wouldn't have been able to share that kiss.
That's true. That is true. And then we would have been not had that, and that would have been terrible. So, okay.
Right.
So, well, that's in Love and War. It's an ambitious episode. I think it's season six is trying to do lots of different things, which I always appreciate. I don't think sometimes their experiments are quite as successful as they were in, say, seasons four and five. But I've gone on and on about how much I love seasons four and five. But I always appreciate any show that in its sixth year is trying to do different things. That's instead of just regurgitating the same stuff over and over again. So all credit to MASH for trying to do this, try to tell this kind of love story in miniature. And, you know, it's a worthwhile effort. Again, I'm still not totally convinced it's the most successful thing in the world, but they're trying it, and it's great performances by everybody all around. And we get to see Margaret be really funny, and that's always good. So as we're wrapping up here, I have to ask you both. You can either have one or maybe have separate answers. Do you have a favorite line or joke from the episode?
I got a couple. So when Hawkeye gets back from seeing the mother, and he's talking to Colonel Potter, and he says, I forget what he says, but Colonel Potter has this line where he says, they take the bone out of your head that explains orders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love that. And then after Hawkeye dumps Winchester's meat out the door, Winchester says something about, you have to attack a man's meat behind his back. I just love that. I just love that
nonsensical way of saying it.
Yes.
To attack a man's meat behind his back.
And it's so quintessential Winchester verbiage, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Completely. Okay. Terry, did you have a favorite joke?
Oh, of course. Yes. It's the final scene. What are you agreeing with me for? You're one of the things around here that stinks. That's, you know, it says it all. I love that scene. I love her delivery. I love Margaret when she's drunk. There's no other, I don't think I've ever seen another person in a TV show that does drunk as well as Loretta Swit.
Yes. Yes. I've said that before. Loretta Swit does a great drunk. She does a
and,
great.
And you know, I was so jealous of you that you got to meet her and talk with her for, I don't know how long it was, but I would have loved to have been on a fly on the wall in that room just to see her, because she's awesome.
She's a real sweetheart. She really was. And I've got to meet her twice now, and it's been terrific both times. So, you know, she does tours at like conventions and stuff with Jamie Farr and Jeff Maxwell. I don't, you know, she might be near your town someday. So I would suggest if you ever see her, go buy a ticket and go talk to her, because she's completely charming, you know? So
I think I would be so starstruck. I would be like her, like,
I understand. I totally understand, but it's worth it. It's worth it to push through it. Trust me. Trust me.
Can I just say something to you?
Yeah, of course.
My daughter introduced me to your podcast, and I just want to say I have learned so much listening to you. You know, things that I would have never even thought of, you know, as a fan of this show. And I just want to thank you.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. I appreciate that. I hope that
you're awesome.
Oh, well, I'm going to cut that part out. But I mean, thank you so much for saying that. I mean, it's a labor of love. I love even the stuff that I love a little less. I love the show so much, and I like to share that love with people, and that's why I have guests on and stuff, and so that's why I have these conversations with people. So thank you. I appreciate it. I'm glad that it's able to add something to your enjoyment of the show. So that's great. Thank you very much for saying that.
Of course.
So did you have a favorite line or scene?
Well, it's actually, you said it. It's the one where Hawkeye shows up, he comes back to the unit, and it's when Potter and BJ are going back to the tent, and he's like, why didn't you tell me that who she was? And Potter says, because I have the line written here, he says, why didn't you tell me? Potter says, because when you become a colonel, they remove the bone in your head that makes you explain orders.
Yes, that's exactly it.
That's fantastic.
I didn't have the exact quote, but I had enough of it to get the point across.
I love the idea that it's a bone that has to be removed. It's great. It's delivered with perfect comic timing by Harry Morgan. Just the bone in your head that makes, like, he's like, I'm the colonel. I don't have to explain why I tell you to do certain things, Hawkeye. Yeah. It's great. It's a really great scene. So, yeah, it makes me laugh every time.
I loved him as Colonel Potter.
Oh, marvelous, marvelous stuff. So, well, ladies, that was In Love and War. And thank you so much for coming on the show. This is both your first podcast. So I hope you enjoyed the experience.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. I did.
Yeah, I'll be sharing it with my coworkers because I've been talking about it all day.
Oh, my. Okay. So. All right. Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for doing it. I really appreciate it. It was marvelous. I love that there's a third generation of MASH fans being created. That is just, I want the show to live on. And so that's just terrific. So again, thank you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I would love to come back if you would have me.
Well, we got five more seasons to cover. So we got, by the way, I should mention just as a housekeeping note, thank you for saying that because I actually forgot to write it in my notes and I meant to say it. This is episode 127 of MASHcast, the 127th episode of MASH, which means we are officially on the back nine of MASH because there's 251 episodes of MASH. So if you break it down, that's on either side, 126 and 125. It doesn't split evenly because it's an odd number. But with one, as of this episode, we are now on the second half of MASH. Oh, so there you go, everybody. We still got 5.5 more seasons.
Still got a lot to go. Yeah,
I got a lot of work to do. But nevertheless, when I started this show 5 years ago, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to do 250 more of these. Well, I've done 126 more of them, so we're getting there.
Right.
We're getting there. Yeah. So that's where we are. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Of course, you can find back episodes of the show on our website, finewaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477cast. And then finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Daniel Ulrich, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Mike Thomas, Joe Perino, Billy Shulman, Dennis Bailey, Kara Kay, Tim English, Adam Ackerman, Lisa P., Laura Braun, Stefan Van Skyke, and David Mann. Thank you so much, everybody. So we will be back in 2 weeks, but until then, that is all.
You called, Mon Colonel?
Madam Min's mother is back at her estate. She needs medical attention. This is all pretty light stuff. I think we can spare you.
Mm-hmm. Well, possibly I could stop by around 6-ish on my way to the club for a sherry.
I'll explain to you later what an ass you're making of yourself.